we have within our jurisdiction. Why don't we start here and we'll go around this way.
Kathy Johnson, Director of Kitson County Social Services and new member to the board or committee.
Kelly Harder, I'm the Human Service Director in Steel County.
Lynn Singleman, I'm the Chief of Staff for the Department of Human Services.
Chuck Johnson, Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services with the Department of Human Services.
And I'm Diane Loeffler. I'm a state representative representing Minneapolis.
Linda Berglund, State Senator representing Minneapolis.
John Berg, Watlin County Commissioner, also Chair of the AMC Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
Paul Fleissner, Director of Community Services for Homestead County.
Nancy Schuweiler, Dakota County Commissioner.
John Evert, Clay County Commissioner.
Great. So we have some new people, and two of the new people are legislators. So, and so we need to elect co-chairs in order to move forward. So somebody has the authority to set agendas and send out meeting notices and do all the administrative work it takes to have a task force. And so at the moment, myself and Diane Loeffler have volunteered, unless there's anyone else who wants to do it. It would be in order then for someone to make that motion.
I'll make a motion that we elect Senators Berglund and Representative Loeffler as our chair and co-chair.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then we'll declare that it is a unanimous ballot. Thank you. The next thing we thought might be helpful is to have a little bit more of an overview of the report that caused this task force to be formed and to refresh our memories for those of us that actually saw the report, and if you hadn't seen the report, to get you up to speed. And so we're very happy that Joel Alter from the Office of Legislative Auditor and Deb Junod are here to help review for us and maybe go into a little bit more depth than they might have gotten to do in front of the legislature. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. I'm Deb Janod with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and this is Joel Alter. We had to dust this off a little bit for us, too, and refresh our memories on the report, but we're happy to be here today to give you an overview of the major findings and recommendations of the reports. You can kind of start in the same place as you begin your work. Today's discussion will focus on the challenges that we raised in the report that we didn't think were being adequately addressed. And those included inconsistent services, too much complexity, the particular focus of this task force, inequitable funding, insufficient assistance to counties, accountability, and issues of the state-county relationship. We'll also discuss some options for structural change that we made in the report and other recommendations. Let me start out with issues of consistency among counties. This was a major focus in the report, and it's engendered, I think, a lot of discussion since the report was released. Ensuring reasonable consistency across county boundaries has been and continues to be an issue in Minnesota's human services system. For example, availability of service providers is a problem in some areas of the state. Publicly funded substance abuse treatment, in particular, varies around the state, so the type of care received really depends on where you live. We also found wide variation in the cost to provide services. One example is the cost of collecting a dollar of child support ranged from about $2 in one county to $9 in another. We also found some variation in program outcomes. The percentage of elders, for example, getting community-based services ranged from 28% to 67% around the state. There's more on this issue of variation in the report on pages 17 to 19, if you're interested in looking more there. Variation isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, we said that in the report as well. We would expect to see variation in a state as demographically and geographically diverse as Minnesota, but we really did think and do think that there's too much variation for a statewide human services system. We also found that some counties were struggling more than others across the range of programs. In particular, a lot of those counties that were struggling were very small counties. A variety of factors influenced the performance of the system in a given county. Those included the way a county chose to organize its human services agency, the skill of staff and providers, the characteristics of the clients who need help in that particular region or area, the distance the clients need to travel for services, availability of providers. Again, all of these played into the story about why service varied among the counties. We also raised issue about the complexity of state and federal law and funding, and we'll talk more about those two issues in particular because we really think, well, first, the legislature's played a direct role in creating those problems, and there were some substantial issues to be addressed. We talk about complexity in the report on pages 22 and 23 with some specific examples that were raised by counties and others that we talked with. But in general, you know, our message was that over the last 10 to 20 years, the volume of human services laws and rules has grown significantly. Much of this complexity comes from the Minnesota legislature, not federal law or rule. In particular, the legislature's decisions to serve or not to serve special populations is a source of complexity. That is, carving out small segments of the population for special treatment or eligibility criteria. Examples of that include Minnesota care rules for members of the military that require a lot of questions to be asked of all applicants when, in fact, it's a very small portion of the population that are served by that particular eligibility criteria. Other examples in the report include eligibility rules for felons, eligibility for group residential housing, exceptions to the MFIP 60-month rule. All were raised to us as opportunities for simplification. Increased complexity, of course, there are consequences of that in terms of more time at the county level processing applications and documenting casework, and certainly more burden for applicants who are trying to obtain services. Complexity, we think, also contributes to opportunities for mistakes. Our work on Minnesota care, for example, highlights that. We noted in our reports that family income was incorrectly calculated in about a third of the cases, in large part because the income eligibility criteria are so complex. We realized that one person's perception of unnecessary complexity is another person's attempt to maximize federal funding and extend benefits as much as possible. We really do understand that, but in our opinion now and when we released the report last year, we think the legislature needs to do a better job of balancing administrative simplicity with access and cost considerations, and we really hope that this group is going to be able to start addressing some of those issues. I would also add here just as a postscript that the demise of the health match system at DHS provides a real opportunity now to address health care eligibility issues before the department moves forward again with an automated health care system. So that might be a good place to start.
Deb was mentioning that some of the inconsistencies that she alluded to relate to program funding, and let me take a moment to talk about that. Overall, about 7% of the state's human services costs are borne by counties, but as you look at different pieces of the human services system, you'll find that counties have a larger share of some types of services. In particular, counties pick up about half the cost of child protection and out-of-home placement costs. The county expenditures total about $500 million a year. And in fact, the local share of child welfare costs in Minnesota are much higher than almost any other state in the country in terms of the share that is borne by the counties. In addition, human services spending levels per capita vary a lot among individual counties, and that variation reflects a number of things. There are differences in service needs among counties, differences in the county preferences. There can be differences in the amount of state and federal funding that counties receive, all of which contribute to differences in per capita spending. counties also vary, as you know, in their ability to pay for, through property taxes, these types of costs. Some counties have a lot of property wealth, some don't have that much at all. And over the years, we concluded that the human services funding formulas have not always done a particularly sophisticated job of taking into account some of those differences among counties. And so the net result is when you look at county tax burdens for human services is that if you look at the spending for human services and relate that to property wealth, such as the spending per $1,000 of what we call in the report tax capacity, there's a lot of difference among counties when you look at the counties at the top of that list and the counties at the bottom. It's a difference of a factor of 10. And so there are a lot of counties in the middle, but we have a lot of difference at the extremes in terms of spending levels and ability to pay for that spending. Finally, counties' ability to pay for particularly social services has been affected during the last few years by state and federal cuts. In 2003, as you know, there was a reduction of about 27% in the social services block grant. Counties are still recovering from that, trying to get back up to where they were. Last year, the federal government enacted a law that reduced case management funding by tens of millions of dollars a year, and the 2008 legislature provided some one-time relief to help offset those cuts, but this is an issue that's going to be back again in the future. Another key issue that we talk about in the report is a type of training and technical assistance that DHS provides to counties. And given the complexity that we've talked about with these programs, as well as the county-to-county variation, state assistance can be a really important thing. And our record, or our report says that DHS's record in these areas is one that shows room for improvement. First, we think the DHS could do more to ensure that residents across the state have reasonable access to services. As Deb alluded to, in some parts of the state, we do have shortages in certain areas, shortages of providers, for example, child psychologists, substance abuse treatment for meth users, certain types of foster care. And these are not necessarily statewide shortages, but we certainly have some regional shortages. We certainly recognize the difficulty of trying to address access issues and try to increase the number of providers. But I think the reason that we also thought this was important to mention is that this is often an issue that is bigger than any single county. And that does require kind of looking at solutions that may be multi-county in nature and that DHS could provide some leadership on. Also, DHS provides training and technical assistance to counties in a variety of program areas. And our work a couple of years ago involved an extensive survey of counties around the state, as well as interviews with state and local officials. And what we found is that the value of the assistance that DHS provides to counties varies a lot by program area. For example, we heard counties being very complimentary of DHS's assistance in areas such as child protection, child support enforcement. They were much less favorable in areas like adult protection, chemical health, child care licensing. And so there's more details in the report, but we found that there's work that DHS could be doing internally to provide more consistent assistance across program areas that's helpful to counties.
I want to just touch on two final challenges, the areas that we raised in the report that this group helps address. The first are issues of accountability. Excuse me. The report identified several areas of weakness in state supervision of human services, including, in particular, lack of performance data and benchmarks. And this is an area that's being addressed, and I know that the department and counties have been doing a lot of work over the last year and a half on gathering performance data and disseminating that information to counties, but it was one of the more major findings of the report last year. Similarly, we found a lot of variation in the use of on-site field reviews to provide on-site guidance and assistance. Managers also told us that they had limited tools available to address performance problems, relying on persuasion primarily when trying to assist a counties in improving performance. The department does have authority to withhold funds, but considers that too harmful to clients, and that's not a tool that they use. In a state-county system like Minnesota's, it's also important for local governing boards to do their part when it comes to oversight. And we found that county governing boards played a key role in some aspects of oversight, such as setting staffing levels, but were playing a far more limited role in broader areas of managing performance in the human services system in their counties. In part, this was related to not having performance information in their hands to use. So over the years, the legislature has revised state laws affecting local governing boards, but we do raise in the report and make some recommendations that the state statutes are confusing and need reworking. They don't adequately specify the responsibilities of county governing boards. And the final challenge area related that we raised in the report had to do with the state-county relationship. And we learned from counties and we heard from the Department of Human Services staff as well that relationships had deteriorated over the past several of years, and that had hindered discussions about important policy development and policy implementation issues. Counties on their one hand wanted DHS to seek their input on important policy changes, wanted county fiscal impacts better related reflected in proposed legislation, and counties wanted DHS to provide them with more information to help them manage their programs. Again, another issue related to performance data. On the other hand, DHS officials told us that they thought counties sometimes drag their feet on state-initiated policy changes, that counties sometimes thumb their noses at efforts to change local practices. So, clearly both parties played a role in this relationship. And again, I think this group together today is a step forward in terms of improving communication and the relationship between the state and counties.
We considered whether it would be necessary in trying to address some of these challenges to for the state to make some structural changes in Minnesota's human services system. And let me discuss this broad issue before we get to some specific recommendations that we make in the report. First, we considered, what about the option of the state just taking over responsibility for what is largely a county-administered human services system? Minnesota is one of just 11 states in the country that relies significantly on counties for administration of human services programs. Our study led us to the conclusion that a full state takeover of human services administration would not be desirable for several reasons. One is that even though there are these different models out there, there are some states where you've got state employees, state agencies that are primarily administering human services programs, in contrast to Minnesota, where we work through the state but rely a lot on counties. We've got these different models, but frankly, there has not been very definitive evidence about whether one model works better than the other. And we thought that to make this kind of a sweeping, large-scale change would really require some greater assurance that that kind of a change was going to lead to some tangible difference in program results, and we're just not aware of any clear-cut evidence in that regard. In the meantime, this is the human services programs around the state, as we've said, are enormously complex. Counties have over the years built relationships and connections with provider agencies, with clients, and I think that it's for us to jump in and make wide-scale changes, we'd have to do that with a great amount of care. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot at risk with that kind of a change. Also, the state would be on the hook for additional dollars if we were to, as a state, assume services that the counties are now administering. There would literally be hundreds of millions of dollars in new costs that the state would assume. Obviously, that would be money that the counties wouldn't have to pick up. So it might be perhaps a wash in terms of net spending, but I think that's a major transition that we should think seriously about before doing. And finally, I think we concluded that for all of the weaknesses that we point out in the report in local oversight of human services spending programs, we do think that there is an opportunity here. There can be value to local oversight of programs. And so we decided, again, that it would be better to work on repairing that, improving local oversight, rather than making a wholesale change. At the same time, we do think that there is a need to take a look at some realignment of responsibilities between the state and the counties. Certain services that are now provided by the counties could probably, perhaps, be provided more effectively, more efficiently, maybe more consistently at the state level. And we came to that conclusion after talking with people at both the state and the local level, and we didn't arrive at a definitive list of exactly which services should go to the state that are now done by the counties, but we put forth a list of some good candidates. We did that in part because in our discussions with DHS and with other officials, it was clear that this needed a little bit of thinking through and fleshing out, but it was also clear that these were pretty good candidates for possible changes in responsibility. And let me just give you some examples that were suggested to us. One is adoption services. This is an area in which some counties, particularly small counties, may have a fairly limited number of cases over the course of a year. The regulations for adoption are extremely complicated, and so it can often be hard for small counties to have the expertise they need to adequately administer adoption services. Child support enforcement was another one that some people mentioned. For example, that can involve locating parents, sometimes doing data searches with statewide systems. It can mean a lot of working with other states. And for some of those tasks, frankly, people said to us, you know, it would be almost better to do some of those things in a centralized manner, to do it with the clout of the state and with the connections that they already are establishing with other states. And so some people simply thought that DHS might be able to do some or all tasks in the child support enforcement area more efficiently and effectively. And one final example is long-term care eligibility determinations. Again, this is an extremely complicated area. Things like how you treat assets when you're determining eligibility is an area that is mind-boggling in its how complicated it is. And again, some people said to us, this might be an area where, frankly, rather than having each county figure this out, and not always for a large number of cases, it might be better to do that centrally. So those are some examples that we suggested it would be good to explore. A final structural issue that we talk about in the report is the issue of consolidation of county human services agencies. And we think it would be prudent for more county human services agencies to consolidate their operations than has been the case to date in Minnesota. Right now, only 5 of the 87 counties participate in multi-county human services agencies. There has been very little movement in this direction over the last 30 years, even though the legislature has at various times expressed interest in it, sometimes created some incentives for it, but it just hasn't happened. And we looked at the record in both in human services and in some other parts of state government in this area, and we concluded that consolidations can have some advantages, that there are cases where counties need to have critical mass in order to really specialize and sometimes even to expand what they're able to do. Sometimes consolidations can lead to improvements in consistency, at least within those counties that are joining together. We found some evidence of administrative efficiencies and cost reductions as a result of consolidations, and clearly there's no guarantee with any of this, but we do think that there is evidence of some advantage when this is done. We also recognize that consolidations are politically difficult, that when it comes down to figuring out, you know, how are we going to merge the staff of 2 or 3 different counties, who's going to stay, who's not going to stay, what's the financial responsibility going to be between these multiple counties in terms of who's picking up the tab, those are difficult decisions, and I think that that's where this usually grinds to a halt, even though it may be a very good logical idea in many cases. Let me turn to the recommendations that we made, and many of these recommendations are ones that don't depend on structural change, although you'll see that we do have some recommendations that push in the direction of structural change as well. First, for the legislature, several recommendations, and the first one really reflects this group that's here today. We said that one of the things that should happen is to establish some work groups to get state officials, county officials talking about ways to simplify programs and to talk about program funding. You're here, I think, primarily to focus on the simplification issue. It would be great to see some focus at some point in the future on more of the funding issues, but I think this is a good step forward. We also suggested, as Deb was alluding to, that at times DHS simply needs to have some additional options for addressing performance problems when they arise in counties. You know, it's great to have persuasion and to be able to provide technical assistance, but sometimes that just isn't enough. And there may be cases where DHS needs some additional options. If the performance problems are so intransigent and are so important, it may be necessary for DHS to have authority to take over certain responsibilities in a county or to direct a particular county to make some structural changes. We also said, as Deb mentioned, that there's a need to clean up and consolidate the statutes that relate to county governance. They have become a bit of a mess over the years, and some of it is very technical issues, and some of it doesn't have a gigantic effect on the ultimate delivery of services, but we would prefer to see clear lines of authority and a clear understanding of who it is that's in charge for these decisions. I think that's an important part of trying to rationalize the state-county relationship. We suggested 2 years ago, or a year and a half when the report came out, that there be some pilot projects established to explore these transfers of some county duties to DHS. And I think the idea that we had in mind then was, again, these are complicated programs. We may not want to do all of this at once. We may want to explore the feasibility maybe in one region of the state, not necessarily all of them. And we're certainly open on this issue. Maybe there's been enough thinking and learning over the past year and a half that maybe some consensus has been reached that it's time to move forward in some of these areas. But our suggestion was to go slow, do some pilot projects, see how it goes, and we're just glad to see the discussion continuing in this group. And then finally, we suggested that the legislature foster more county agency consolidation. Back in the 1970s, the legislature tried to do this by putting out some financial incentives to counties, and we recognize that today, in this budget climate, that's not very likely to happen. If it would, that's fine. But as some alternatives to that, we have other aspects of state government, such as community corrections, public health, where what the legislature has done is to outline some population thresholds, and the local agencies become eligible for the money if they have enough of a population to surpass those thresholds that have been set. That's another option. Or the legislature could give DHS the authority to, if performance at the local level doesn't meet a certain threshold, then DHS might have the authority to trigger some local reorganizations. That might be one of the other options that could be considered. And then finally, some recommendations that are more for DHS, primarily focused on improving accountability. We suggest that DHS develop performance measures and benchmarks, and as we mentioned, there's been some progress in this regard. We also think DHS just needs to use information more strategically. Get that information out in the hands not only of human service administrators in counties, but also county boards so that they can put it to use. And when there are counties that persistently struggle to perform well year after year, identify those counties that seem to be having problems across programs and work with them to try to make necessary improvements. In addition, we think DHS needs to more actively identify parts of the state where there are gaps in services, work with counties again on devising possible solutions, and more generally working on ways to improve training and program guidance and sharing best practices. And we think the county governing boards need to play a stronger role in all of this too. For example, by, again, monitoring performance, assuming the information is put in the hands of county boards, let's have the county boards having discussions about that and how to improve, and perhaps even signing off on counties' plans on how to make improvements in performance. So, in conclusion, a few final thoughts. This is a report that is, I guess, a little bit different than some that we issue in that it wasn't focused on a particular program. It was really focused on a system and trying to highlight challenges that face the state and that face the counties as we move forward. We see this report, and we saw it a year and a half ago, as a starting point, and we realize the discussions are still probably at an early stage, but that's fine. I mean, the important thing is to get the conversation going on these difficult issues. We do think that given the nature of this system, which relies on both the state and the counties, there are questions that have to be addressed. Where are we going to set the bar for performance? Who exactly is going to have the administrative authority to deliver the programs and to make decisions? And is there a minimum level of administrative capacity that a local agency needs to do this effectively and efficiently? These are tough questions, but we're glad you're asking them and that you're giving some thought to them, and we hope that in the end these discussions lead to some changes in the way that services are administered. Thank you very much.
Are there questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, and thank you to our guests for your work. It's hard for anyone to get their hands around this big and complex a system with so many levels of government involved. And, you know, I've always subscribed to the thought that very oftentimes form follows finance. And in this area, we have a mix of county property tax generated dollars, fees, state money, federal money. Is that, to what degree do you think that contributes to the challenges that you've outlined where there isn't, you know, where the state might be issuing directives, but the costs of implementing those might fall on a county board who is or isn't able or willing to raise revenues to meet additional responsibilities? And I know there was, you know, I think there's some nugget there of where these two things interact. It's not just the structure, it's also the finances. And could you tell us if you spent a little time thinking about that?
Let me just start by, you might want to take a look in the report on page 28. There's a graph that's kind of an interesting grounding to this discussion because, you know, it's always hard to generalize in this area because it's different depending on which service you're looking at. But again, this is what this chart is showing is the portion of funding that is borne by counties, basically, ranging from half the funding in children's services to really very little of the funding in some of the health care programs. And yet, for example, in health care, that's where the state has had a lot of directives and has added to complexity. And so that has been a frustration. I think that is an issue. And in children's services, maybe the state has had fewer directives, and yet there is frustration that the state hasn't been as much of a player in funding those services. So I guess the short answer is yes. I think funding is related to some of the frustrations and the challenges and the difficulties that we were talking about today.
And actually, almost in contrast to some of the funding issues, when we looked at where has Minnesota done a lot in terms of performance expectations and measures to assess performance of programs, it's some of those that are more federally funded. It's federally driven where the state has moved farther, for example, in MFIP. And it's just another piece of that discussion about, you know, funding and control that that we raised in the report.
Are there other questions? Yes.
Madam Chair, I have two questions that I would just like to clarify. One thing was that you brought up was reasonable access to services. Has there any been attempt to define what that would mean?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware. I'm sure there are certain parts of human services where there have probably been over the years some working definitions of that, but
distance to travel, for example, I think is in some program areas.
But there's no magic bullet either. I mean, it's not like there's examples. It's an ongoing discussion and definition about what is reasonable. Clearly,
that is an important issue for me, being from probably the most rural part of the state, and in the feds, Kitson County is considered frontier status, so that when you start saying reasonable access to service, what can we expect for the residents of Kitson County? What would we have to provide? The other question I would have is for, you mentioned the funding for health And I actually happen to be part of the Quinn County. There is no Quinn County in Minnesota, but we are five counties that receive our public health funding. And so it's more of just a question because I don't know the answers myself, but I'm not sure what that was to accomplish. And then has there ever been any study to see if it accomplished what it was meant to? You know, quite frankly, from my vantage point, is I don't see any difference. I see it as a funding funneler, and it didn't necessarily change any services at all.
Madam Chair, and we heard that concern about on the public health side. I don't think we heard that as much on the community correction side, where there has also been a threshold set, and where I think the idea, and again, some of this is pretty ancient history because this was done back in the 70s, but, you know, I think the idea was that there was a certain critical mass that counties needed to have to do this effectively, and that was at least the idea behind it. But
whether
I'm not sure we've systematically evaluated exactly how well that's worked.
Thank you. Thank you.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We wanted to have some time for discussion about the legislative auditor's ideas and some of the areas that they've suggested that be looked at, just to get people's reaction to it.
Well, for me, Madam Chair, if I
may. Yes, Ms. Johnson.
It was one of those hard pills to swallow in that I was one of the counties that was one of those struggling counties that the report noted as under, I forget what the term was, what were we, under something achieving? Underachieving, I believe. And so that was hard, and it was actually, I had to do a lot of work with my staff to say, hey, wait, we're doing a good job here. And in fact, I was in the middle of my children's family services review by the state, and that was one of the hits where my county took a response on. And a part of it is, as the OLA had referred to, is that our critical mass. You know, when you put us on a percentage basis and maybe we have two families that hit that one program area, if we don't quite meet the standard in one family, we're 50% off, you know. And so it was kind of a bitter pill to swallow for us. But I'm not saying that it isn't a good discussion point, and I think they did as fair a job as they could to present the issues from their side, but there's definitely a different side from the county in some of these areas.
Well, I think that it certainly points out that maybe we're asking some of you to do things that are almost impossible to do. And I think it's always good for us to realize that and reflect on that. And rather than talking about whether you're doing a good job or not, maybe we're asking you to do things that are impossible given the situation that we've provided to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Other comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
From my perspective, I think this was a conversation starter. I think with our Financial Times as well, counties, at least within our MACS Association, we're taking a look, what are our core functions? What things should be done by counties in the human service area, maybe? What should state or private be doing? And I think we are taking a look at that. I don't think we have any response yet. But as I look at some of the recommendations, I get a little leery because some of this is taking local control away. What I'd like to see is that we've, in very few programs, do we have any real incentives, financial incentives and others, or perhaps relief from regulations related to outcomes. And that's partially because I don't think we have a real consistent approach to outcomes yet. We're working on it. So as we go forward, I'd hope that usually punishment leads to avoidance, not a lot of new positive behavior. So I hope there's a positive approach toward incenting counties, whether it's for consolidation, for better performance, and that local control is not thrown aside.
Madam Chair.
Comments? Yes.
You know, I think I want to also commend the OLA. They did, I think, a wonderful job in a very complex and challenging topic. You know, I think that if we all in this committee and even outside of this committee, when we're working together amongst departments, I think too often we might lose ourselves in the issues of funding and structure, when at the end of the day it all leads to one of the most important things, and that's the service to those of need in this state. And I wish if more often that the centerpiece of the table around the conversation was that and not all the other stuff that happens, and I think we would find ourselves in a workable solution and in a solution that is best for the residents that we are all given taxpayer dollars to serve, and we have an obligation to that. Having said that, and I know the OLA touched on this, which is, you know, as counties and MACs, we are forever, because we're the ones delivering that service, that tension point is what hits our office. The policy happens up here, the rules are written, and it working or not working happen at the local level with financial obligations one way or the other. And, you know, over the last few years, the frustration on behalf of the counties has just really been the erosion of what has felt like a genuine partnership. And it isn't so much what is said, it's the behaviors and the decisions that are made. And so we come to the table wanting to find solution, and there are many great people working within the Department of Human Services and very talented people. And at the end of the day, I think if you look at it over the years, and I you know, and maybe they would speak to some of their private conversations they had with many's, is just there was this erosion. And it's not, I don't believe, to be intentional, but it's one of those systemic pieces, which is how do we get back to what that partnership for the sake of the good of the residents is about? And I think if we can stay focused on that, we can take, and counties are willing, we just last month completed a white paper, and the association, not unanimously, but the association did approve a white paper on helping counties think about multi-county partnerships. And the counties let out on that. And it's not like we're not willing to. We want to have that. We want to engage it. But we need our other partner to get it done, who has authority over, to join us, and I think, in the legislature, to create incentives to really make that happen, because it is inevitable. We know as directors in some parts of the state, the level of specialization, whether it's the feds or the state, whoever requires it, you can't do that with one person being a generalist anymore. So as our conversation goes on here, we have thought and have taken this legislation very seriously, and as the department has, I'm impressed with looking at this, how much work's been done since this has come out, both by the department and by the counties. I'll tell you, the one area that is of most concern to me is that partnership piece has only continued to erode, and I hope that that's something else that we can find a way to really work through in all of this for the good of the residents of the great state. Thank you.
Is that white paper available?
I'm looking over. It was passed by our association, so we can make that available to the members as well.
I think that would be a good thing.
Yep.
Yes, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Harder, I heard you saying, you know, about the partnership, and I think that's really key. But I also heard you talking about sort of the generalist, specialist sort of concept. And one of the things I'd like to get some feedback from some of the smaller counties who are represented here. I think in a larger county, it's easier to specialize, so that if you have a lot of complexity on eligibility for a particular service or how to handle a particular case, you can have people who specialize in that. DHS has almost no specialists, is my understanding, or generalists. They're all within program sort of silos, and I know sometimes I felt like the job of the counties on advisory committee to the state agency was to tell them about what other parts of the state agency were doing, because it's gotten that big and complicated. And I'm wondering if that's part of our challenge, is that you're not able as a smaller county to specialize, and that maybe our system has really gone to a far degree to expecting that ability to absorb a lot of detail and a lot of specificity by program.
Madam Chair, that might be my question to answer here. Yes, it has. What we find in Kitson County is that we spend a lot of time in the manual because all my workers are generalists. We do not have specialists. I have 3.8 social workers that have to know all the social service manuals and 2.5 financial workers who have to know all the manuals for health care eligibility. And we spend a lot of time because what I say, we get a little of everything but not a lot of anything, so that when things come up, we have to go back to our manuals again and again and again. And, of course, one thing with the manuals is they're not all-inclusive. You know, they give you examples, but then there's freedom to interpret. And counties are afraid to interpret too much because the new wave for the state is that there's payback. If you make the wrong interpretation or the wrong decision, now you're going to have to pay that back through county levy. So it becomes a real, that is a problem, and which then comes to our consolidation for a county like Kitson. Our neighbor is North Dakota to the west, Manitoba to the north, and we have two other counties that we are neighbors to. And quite frankly, they don't need us. You know, Kitson County would be willing to administratively consolidate. I don't see how we could get any less people than we have right now to cover Kitson County, to make sure that the residents of Kitson County are covered. But administratively, we do need help. I am the director and supervisor. And I feel my workers are at a disadvantage sometimes because I can't have the knowledge that they sometimes need. So we spend a lot of time going through manuals to make sure that we're making the right decision, first for our client and then for ourselves, so that we're protecting the county.
Just to follow up on that,
Representative Loeffler,
would you feel like you, instead of turning to the manuals, that you'd prefer to be able to turn to a real person at the state, or who could be a coach in dealing with cases that you haven't encountered for a while or that you're not quite sure about the complexities, as opposed to I've read enough instructional bulletins in my life to know I could see where those would be hard to get guidance out of sometimes, and when you've got a tricky case that kind of crosses across programs. You know, most people don't come with just one problem. You know, would that be more helpful, and do you feel like you have that resource to call at the state level? I don't know.
Well, Representative Loeffler, you probably have some experience maybe with this, too. For us, we have a regional resource, and we have very many contacts. And quite frankly, because I am at the director level and have met Lynn and Chuck, I sometimes use my director card and instead bypass some of the regional stuff to get to the top people. Even our regional resources sometimes don't know our answers. I mean, it does get to be complex. I'm not going to say that the state is not responsive, because they are. We do have ability to put in questions on eligibility through HealthQuest and things like that. So then that's email. And, you know, the response time varies. Sometimes we get a very quick answer, sometimes we don't, and that could be about the complexity, there we go, of our question, too. But, you know, we can't have immediate answers all the time either, and that's sometimes frustrating, is when we're trying to decide a case and where to go, nobody really knows the answer right away, and we have to wait sometimes to get that help. But the state is responsive to our questions.
Other comments?
Representative
Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The call for more performance measures, I really believe in outcome measures, and I think that focuses everyone on outcomes. Sometimes it feels like we have a lot of process standpoints, and I'm wondering if the people here feel like we've got a common even definition of what the desired outcome is, and could we move to more of an outcomes focused in some of the measures as opposed to process measures? And would that give some flexibility still with, you know, accountability and reporting that people could envision? I don't know if you could give specific examples of programs where you've seen that work or not that we should look at.
Madam Chair, From my perspective, we have, in some areas, we have well-defined outcomes like child and family services and child protection. We have the federal benchmarks and those kinds of things, child support. But you get into things like healthcare eligibility, I get very concerned because it's all process measures. It's really not outcomes for clients. And that's why when you get into such a complicated eligibility system and you feel like you don't have the tools to do the job, whether it's the technology tools or the number of staff, it's hard to meet any kind of outcomes, even the process outcomes. So it varies across the many programs that we manage. I think we're trying to build better definitions of outcomes in things like mental health, but I don't think there are well established across all programs, but I think there's been progress.
Other comments?
Madam Chair, I want to piggyback off what Mr. Fleissner was saying, however, that one of the and it's going to reinforce my earlier statement about this genuine, authentic partnership versus process partnership. And what I mean by that is initially the department did come out with, and they grabbed what would, to me would seem logical, which are a lot of outcomes in healthcare, food support, and eligibility, and other measurements within the department. And they came to the counties and said, here's what we're going to measure as far as what those outcomes. And the county's response was those – we believe there's better, more valid outcomes to be measured that mean something at the end of the day, not just to say there's an outcome for the sake of an outcome. Subsequently, the department, they hired someone, I think, actually, I don't remember who that individual's name was, but he, they did put that out and made made some adjustments, and I believe there's a working group to continue then refining. But the amount of twisting and hand-wringing and gyrations that that process had to take, and here were the two partners that are supposed to be at the table to sit down and do that together. And we got there, but I go back to my earlier comment, which is we're here for the same good of the whole. And I'm yet to understand why this has become such a painful process to get to that same end game when we need to sit down and authentically have that dialogue early on and say, what can we agree and what do we disagree? It's okay to disagree. This isn't personal about it, but we fully as counties have said we embrace outcomes. Let's not measure process. Let's measure what they are. But we want to be at the table, especially since we have such a vested interest into the with financing as well as these outcomes. Because as the cases go, so go the cost around some of them, especially children and out-of-home placement and adoptions.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, on I, too, like outcomes. I think it helps give us something to remind us, not only our clients that we're working for, but what we need to do to keep us accountable also to the clients. So things like timeliness for applications to make sure that they're being processed in a timely manner. I find that is to be very helpful, and if it isn't, if they're not being processed in a timely manner in Kitson County, I need to know what that reason is. Is it what's the process that's holding up getting applications processed timely? Then there are other situations such as adult mental health when we were looking at reducing hospitalization. That was a clear end outcome that we were looking to doing. And once that's accomplished, I haven't heard yet what our next outcome is. I'm not quite sure if that's our only outcome, so that's what we're keeping our process in place is to make sure that our community services are based up. But what are our outcomes based on now is a question that we've asked and haven't always gotten an answer. So that I, too, like outcomes. But, again, what's the purpose to make sure that our outcomes are well-defined and that we're not sometimes creating unwanted responses also from our outcomes that sometimes just going for the working towards the outcome doesn't always work, such as in Kitson County. One of our outcomes is to try to keep kids in as few placements as possible, which again is a good thing to do, but sometimes it just isn't possible that we, because of the situation, we might need to move a child into a different placement for their own good. But then that reflects back on us in that, again, for our percentages, might throw our percentages all out of whack. But we weren't working towards the outcome. We were working towards the child and what's best for the child. And that's my point, is sometimes we have to make sure that our outcomes also take into consideration that sometimes our clients, we need to do what's right for them first.
Other comments? I wanted to just add to the list that the auditor had identified as things that we might want to look at, the addition of contracting for waivered services, that some people have identified that as possibly something that could be done by the state, since the state has some expertise in contracting for healthcare services, and that it might make sense for the state to do it rather than all 87 counties doing it individually, and oftentimes with the same providers. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, you know, we've kind of bit off a whole big chunk of things, and I think we are going to have to focus, but I was intrigued with the idea of trying to do administrative streamlining before we sort of set up all the structure for measurement and performance outcomes and those sorts of things with, for example, the suggestion from the auditor staff of looking at simplifying medical eligibility before we go further on investing in a computer system that's based on tremendous complexity, or whether we ought to look at, even on some of these other areas, whether or not we could do some administrative streamlining before, so that then resources can be shifted and reassigned to focus more on the outcomes that are agreed to, because I think, and looking across programs, because I know it used to be true in the old days, and I don't know if it's still true, but the exact same vendor might be a vendor under the CADI waiver, under the CAC waiver, under AC, and under elderly waiver, and giving the exact same service at four different rates, mm-hmm. because of the uniqueness of those four different programs. And so before we consolidate the contract buying, maybe we have to look at kind of consolidating, you know, sort of the expectations for similar services to similar needs. Sometimes the programs just differ by whether you're over 65 or under 65. It really doesn't make a whole lot of difference in the life of the person being served. And yet, think of, for a small agency, what that means in terms of having to keep track of all that and keeping the billing separate. I've always felt like there were some areas where we could look across programs and actually achieve some of what you were talking about.
Well, I think the notion of contracting for waivered services has some implications for trying to come up with more of a statewide rate structure also. You know, at one time, the counties contracted for nursing home services and set their own rates, and eventually we decided that maybe wasn't such a good way to do things, and maybe we're at that point now with waiver services. I know when we were just talking about developing waiver services, certainly the counties had a big role to play, but maybe the time has come to move on from that. Other comments? Yes.
Madam Chair, we're piloting that concept in southern Minnesota. We have 9 counties doing contract management as a group, and I think it's exactly to the point you were trying to make, trying to get consistency around rate setting and also just consistency in contracting. As we've gotten a more complex system, it is overwhelming for counties, and we were able to share expertise, and I think I believe that if you could take that to the state level, that'd be even better. But I know in terms of what counties face these days are penalties if we overspend, audits, which lead to some other penalties. And so part of what drove us was to avoid those kinds of situations. And hopefully that proves successful and maybe can build toward a statewide model.
Other comments? Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Loeffler, I was just going to add, on top of not only do they have three different rate structures, they have different rate structures negotiated within surrounding counties. So they can have three different rates for the same service and charge different rates. This was why we as Region 10 directors did move forward on the county's dime to pay for and use the infrastructure within Olmsted's contracting division so that smaller counties who don't have that infrastructure in place could do that. And it's looking real positive at this point. One thing I'm going to, if I might, Madam Chair, just throw out a concept for the committee to consider and possibly digest. But because, you know, this is, it's kind of like how do you eat an elephant, but, you know, one bite at a time. And this is truly multiple elephants because these are large systems, and I think we all fully acknowledge it. You know, a concurrent or parallel type game plan might be, one is to look for low-hanging, what I'll refer to as the low-hanging fruit that I would define as technical fixes, budget neutral. I think those are terms we'd like to hear coming into this upcoming session. But are there some budget neutral technical fixes? And if we think they are, at least let's flesh them out and see if they truly are or are not. Technical fixes, whether it's around, and you'll hear later on from Mr. Fleissner and I, some around healthcare eligibility, but there's probably some other ones that if we put our heads together, you all as legislators could help us, and then we would help you type of thing. So that'd be one. So how do we run a parallel track of that low-hanging fruit? And then parallel to that, or concurrently, how do we also look at and maybe choose one of the larger issues, whether that be the child care licensing? We have some thoughts around that within the organization. Or do you look at the child support? Do we look at the contracting and take on one of those pieces and start fleshing it and working it through? Finally, I would say, and it resonated with me after our first meeting we had, and there was some conversation to be had. Now, this is a lofty goal, if it could be, but does this committee have a capacity that during a legislative session at some point weigh in, if you would, on a bill that's getting along the way to weigh in on its complexity factor, if you would? And that there's a lot of bills that with the best of intentions and the right heart and spirit in mind are finding their way, and then they land in the department, unbeknownst or known to the department, but then how to make that fit into the it wasn't like the bill was made to fit into the gears that are already moving. And so to make it fit, it has to go into a program that creates a whole other set of complexities without anybody's ill intent at all. But it does happen. And so is there some sense of the complexity factor that the committee might or might not weigh in? Not that it'll change votes or it might, I don't know, but at least we know it's coming. Because part of the OLA report was that, you know, a significant amount of the complexity that exists, I think we're just that, good intended legislation that couldn't find a natural vehicle or gear to fit in with within the department that made sense once it hit the ground. So those are just three considerations I would propose.
Just one comment back, and that is I think there's almost nothing that goes through the legislature that the department isn't aware of.
Sure, yeah.
Weighs in on one way or another, beginning, middle, or end somewhere. The only time that occasionally happens is something that's thrown into a conference committee that isn't a human services conference committee, I might add.
Sure.
at the last minute.
But, Madam Chair, maybe that's the issue in that it they get their opinion here, but that's a policy level, and it might make good sense there, but when it drops into the operations, it's another dimension of that policy that when it lands on the street, if you would, is what creates these layers of complication that over time they stack up and people say, well, that's good intention. That's not what it meant to happen. So that would be my only piece of feedback.
Other comments?
One last one, Madam Chair. I did find a copy of that Exploring Voluntary Human Services Multi-County Collaboration document that we just passed last month. I'll send it around if people want to take a look, and if you want to keep it. I know there's going to be a final approved copy that will go out on our website, but in case people want to peek, I'll send it around.
Sure, and we can get some copies made so people here that don't have one could take one home if they want. Other comments, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Harder, for I have to say, now that I'm part of the guilty partner of the legislature that sometimes creates new complexity, I've been trying to think about consciously as we've gone through and done our work, you know, where are we creating the obstacles and the problems? And part of it is because this area is so big and so huge and so subject to federal changes that we have to react to and court cases that we have to react to, that our docket is pretty full. You've seen our committee hearings where you sometimes have 10 bills or more scheduled. And the voice I sometimes miss and yearn for is that practical voice at the point that we're weighing things about this will work or won't, because we tend to be reacting to the good ideas of not ourselves as much as everyone. I mean, whether it's a nonprofit advocacy group that comes to us, it's a constituent who comes with a problem that fell between the cracks and you're trying to close the cracks, or it's a new initiative. I don't care if you're the governor or if you're a legislator, the idea of, you know, seeing a problem and solving it is pretty irresistible. And sometimes that gets a lot more attention and is lots more fun to talk about than the current problems of the current system. And I think we need to figure out ways to raise up the adequacy or inadequacy of components of our current system into our discussion, whether it's in our budget review or it's in as we consider new initiatives that come to us, because we're only as good as the information that comes to us and that gets weighed, whether you're a DHS staff person putting together the implementation, you know, information, or if it's us trying to decide on a policy issue. And I think sometimes we don't have all the right voices coming in at the right time, and I'm certainly open to suggestions on how we can change our process to better make that happen. I know sometimes it moves too fast for people from outside to really get down to that nitty-gritty level, and that the association lobbyists tend to pick one or two things to work on, and they don't have the time or the expertise to work on all the others. And I think we have a systems issue even at the policy level. It's not just at the implementation level that we've been talking about here mostly.
I wondered if there are any comments about the concept that the legislative auditor talked about in terms of trying to provide a mechanism for a number of areas of the state to try to find more resources in the provider area. I know that we've done this with the Office of Rural Health with, you know, physicians and nurses, but I don't think they've gone much beyond that into some of these other areas, and yet they were formed for the very same reason, that it just didn't make sense for rural areas of the state to be competing against each other to get a provider. And so forming a mechanism to cooperate and to get as many as we need rather than fighting about one that might be willing to come that we know about. And so I'm just interested in whether there is any merit to this idea of trying to provide assistance for helping areas of the state that have a shortage of providers, and that that is what's causing the lack of access to services.
Madam Chair, again, I guess I need a definition of what's access to services. What services would people want that in the rural areas and deep rural like we are, what aren't they getting?
The ones that were mentioned were mental health providers for children, meth treatment providers, some long-term care services, interpreter services. I don't know
right. What
they all might be, but they seem to fall more in the allied area rather than the direct physician nurse area.
Right. Madam Chair, I can comment on some of those then. In a lot of ways, you know, we talk about multi-county collaboration. And in our area, we collaborate on everything. And one of them is the adult mental health initiative that we have. And that's been a very good funding stream for our area. And what the state has done is allowed us as county directors, along with our providers. In our area, we brought our providers on board. We have two main providers of mental health in our region. And they're competitors, but they've come to the table and are working together. Our initiative then to attract people, I find it a beautiful place to live. Not everybody has the same opinion, but to attract professionals, even Minneapolis has trouble attracting psychiatrists to come here to practice. So attracting them up into the northwest corner is even more difficult. What our initiative has been able to do is to help our providers then with that funding that they need to attract and keep psychiatry up in the northwest corner. We are moving to telemedicine. Our initiative has been able to help us with telemedicine, which we are also using for our psychiatry. In that case, you know, the department and through that adult mental health initiative has done and through our collaboration, we've been doing very good things, I think, to try to keep that level of service in our region. As far as children, I think children is a whole new game, and I believe the department is starting to focus in a little more diligently, I believe, on children's mental health. That's another whole ball game. In our region, again, collaboratively, we got a systems of care grant from the federal government. We're trying to systematically change our whole way of delivering services to the children with mental illness. Again, what happens in our area is it's mass. Such as programs like an ERTS, which is an individual, help me guys, treatment service that we were required to have. It was one of those evidence-based practices. We didn't have the mass to keep an ERTS open because they had to be a certain level of beds. So we had to have, and the department granted us the ability to adjust that. We have an ERTS and a bed board and lodge. So those type of things that we need in our region is that we don't fit the mold all the time, and that a cookie cutter approach just doesn't work in northwest, in our corner of the state, in upper northwest Minnesota. I hope I addressed some of your questions, Benji.
Well, I wasn't suggesting a cookie cutter approach, but if you all feel like this isn't a problem, that some folks mentioned it to the legislative auditor when they were going around studying this, and if you don't think it's a problem, then maybe we don't need to think about it. But it seemed to me like if it was, it was one of the ones that might be easier to bite off, since we do have a model that does it for part of the delivery system anyway.
Madam Chair, again, I didn't want to say it isn't a problem. That, I mean, to attract services and providers, that to have continuity, we don't always have continuity. I think what we're doing the best we can. If there was something else the state could do to help, that would be welcome. But I'm not. I'll just leave it at that. That, and I didn't want to say it wasn't a problem, but I do think, such as meth. We did have a treatment program set up for meth addicts, and meth in our corner of the state was a huge issue for a while. I think some of the legislative decisions on anhydrous and other things in our rural farming communities did make a difference for reducing some of that, actually the tough penalties for meth, making meth and things. Also sent it over the Red River onto the North Dakota side. But the point being, again, our provider couldn't make a go of it because there wasn't enough en masse people that were continuing to come through their doors, that they could not make that program go, and that program has closed.
So maybe it's a combination of using more of a regional approach to delivering services and assistance with recruiting of professionals.
Correct.
Madam Chair?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. On that issue, though, I think it's not just a rural issue because I think there's provider shortages and various specialties, particularly for people who are bilingual or have, their services are certainly going to be much more effectively delivered if they're actually being delivered by someone who's a native speaker or a fluent speaker than when you have to also pay for an additional person to be that interpreter and coordinate schedules and those sorts of things to provide services. And one thing that I've heard that even for the larger counties that used to do a lot more service development, that with more resources going to health plans, their ability to even know when there's a critical mass enough to support someone. You know, you may have a large group of elders who speak a particular language, but when you divide them up between five health plans, you may not know that there's enough there to all of a sudden, you know, justify really trying to develop a home care provider that specializes in that cultural background and that language or that sort of thing. So I think it's a challenge both by professional licensing as well as kind of subpopulation that might, you know, we also, we'd want to look at whether or not we've got the right partnerships with our higher education institutions, where I think some of the people who are coming out with those skills are being attracted into better paying positions in that industry than they are in public service.
Any other comments? Okay, well, next item on the agenda is a presentation that the Minnesota Association of Counties has put together about ideas they have. I think this would fall into the first category that was identified by Mr. Harder, technical changes that could be budget neutral that might make the system less complex and easier to administer. And so Mr. Harder and Mr. Fleisner are going to do this presentation together, so I don't know which one of you wants to go first.
I do the dance, and then he talks.
Yeah, I'll jump in, because this too, is a conversation starter. It's any kind of end game when it comes to a document. Really, it was driven by frustration with our current eligibility system. We're kind of drowning in trying to keep up with healthcare eligibility these days, and it is a very complex system. The comments within this document really come from people on the front line, and that's where I think there's a disconnect between our, and Kelly mentioned it earlier, between our operational, what's going on the ground floor, and where our policy goes. For me, I always feel frustrated when I can't give my staff the tools to do the job. And one of the disappointing things with Health Match falling apart is we really were hoping that would help us be able to keep up. It's gotten so complex, and in our county, we have paraprofessionals trying to do this kind of work. And quite honestly, I think they deserve a PhD, and I think all of Kathy's staff do, because I can't imagine not only healthcare eligibility, but all our other programs on the shoulders of less than 10 people. I can't imagine. So I'm not going to go through this whole document, but I'm going to highlight a few things, and then Kelly can chime in where he'd like. We really need to give the tools to our staff. I'm just going to highlight, if you turn to page 3, one example of the multiple ways we have to figure out the value of vehicles in every single program. And again, I'm not going to read this to you, but you can see there are different ways for MFIP, food support, MA, Minnesota Supplemental Assistance, GRH, and the various programs. And that's just one item of determining the value of something, and one item that all of Kathy's staff have to know. What frustrates me is we get audited for errors, and a lot of this stuff is not automated. Some of it is, some of it isn't. I am, again, not going to go through it all, but if you look at the appendices that start on page 10 and go to the end of the document, these are lists of the workarounds, and they're just, I know they're bulleted items. Most of them don't mean anything to any of us because they're in a different language of the healthcare eligibility world. But every one of these items, our staff have to do workarounds because the systems are not programmed to do this. So it's ripe for error. It's ripe for delays in eligibility for the people we serve. And so when we have outcomes that are based on process, I think the policy issue, how do we get the tools in the hands of the people doing this work so we get people eligible when they're supposed to be eligible and in a timely manner? So with that in mind, I threw this document together. There's a few other examples besides vehicles in here. If you look at page 9, there's just four simple ideas for consideration of this group. I think we need some items that will lead to some early success so we can say we simplified something. vehicle asset determination is one that comes to mind for me. Why do we need that many ways to determine what a vehicle's worth? Automate the top 10 fiats. And actually, since this document came out and there's been some discussions between DHS and some of our supervisors, I think they're taking a look at this. Equalize reporting timelines. We've got monthly, semi-annual, annually kinds of things, and it gets very confusing, in particular for our clients. And then all of a sudden there's gaps in eligibility. The next one is have DHS convene a county technology systems user group focusing on simplification. I know we have a county technology systems group with DHS, but I think we really need to get those frontline, not upper management folks involved so that we know the day-to-day frustrations, and that's well communicated. I think we need to require new systems, and this gets to Representative Loeffler's issue, to be programmed flexibly so they can be reprogrammed as policy changes. And I really like her idea that we simplify before we start building a system. And then it seems to me we need to add technology upgrades to legislative fiscal notes so that if we are looking at a policy change, that's going to impact one of the systems like healthcare eligibility, we know that we're going to build some money in to program it so that the staff have the tools to do the job. So those were some ideas that I hope we could at least consider as part of this group.
Madam Chair, the only piece I would add to this is that we brought the concept of administrative simplification to the association, all the counties. This is, and through healthcare committee, this is where they directed us to go, was through the process of healthcare eligibility. I mean, we could have gone in so many directions, but it was unanimous that they said the best bang for our buck would be to start with something that's tangible, it matters at the ground level, and this is where they directed us, and then I commend Olmsted County, Paul's leadership and their staff, who did put this together on their time in addition to everything else. And finally, I think we're going to be obviously confronted then with the fiscal piece of all of this, that which isn't budget neutral, and to say, well, but we can't afford it. And I'm going to continue to challenge all of us to say, but sometimes the best investment is the very one you can't afford because it'll bring forth the savings and the return on that investment exponentially. And I think this is a prime area where if we could automate some of the interfaces between, for example, Prism and Maxis, that it requires them to enter them manually in a duplicate, in some, I think, fashions, even three levels, they manually enter the same data. And I would think that in this day and age, we're hopefully able to, well, we know we can do it. It's a matter of having the dollars vested. And Chuck and Lynn have been, we've spoken to them about this too, and I think we all realize there's some things that are just going to take those resources. It's not that they're not willing. And then, of course, at that point, you had the whole health match piece hanging in there, and we didn't know where that was at. Well, now we know where it's at, but to Paul's point, and I think we can't forget it, if we don't simplify, all we're doing is programming the complexity into, and that was somewhat of its downfall already, was it was just such a massively, almost impossible thing to automate, all the decision matrix and decision. And because they can't automate that on a private vendor, yet we have our workers sitting there doing it in their heads every day. And then you get penalized when there's an error and holdbacks and all kinds of things happen from the feds and also the state. So I think that's, on behalf of the association, this is one that they were a pretty directive to us to bring forward on behalf of those counties. Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
Madam Chair, Were you involved in the meeting last week of the Human Systems Technology Group, or was one of the any of the county folks here? Because I wasn't in it myself, but I did. I just talked with our CIO a little bit, and that this was a group between county staff and the department talking about systems and how we move forward on that. And that is, I think, part of what your progress around number two here. And the discussion, as I understand it, was very much at a higher level about across systems and how we think of moving forward on technology, how we deal with the fact that many counties are moving forward on technology pieces on their own that they want to link into our systems, and how we do that in a way that we don't have 87 different versions of that going on and that we're in concert in how we do it. But also getting at some of the issues that are under number one, both in terms of prioritizing, but part of that discussion being from, as I understand it, from the county side is number one priority is that our systems are up and running all the time, because when they're down, that costs you too much on business time. And that's, of course, 90% of our time and energy on our systems goes into the daily operations, running the batch jobs, doing all the things to make sure that the systems are running and giving you the correct results. And as Mr. Harder said, we have had discussions around the top 10 fiats and working together with the counties on how we can prioritize those. The 10 that are in this document would take us a very long time to get them all fixed, but we are working with the supervisors group to figure out which ones are sort of simpler and can be moved forward more quickly and also have an impact on the local workers. I'd also add number four is already done. That, as Senator Bergman is aware, you get fiscal notes on our systems when there's a change in law that's going to affect those. And I think there's complete alignment between the department and the counties on number three. That was part of the health match vision. That's certainly where we want to go in the future with all technology. It's just a matter of how we get there. For us, incrementally within, you know, the budgets that we have, it's not absent Kelly's plea for large new influx of money. That's the way that we're working at it.
And I would just say that we've been trying to simplify the eligibility requirements and the re-eligibility requirements for Minnesota Care. But we haven't been able to do exactly the same thing on the medical assistance side, even though we'd like to, because we don't have the resources. And so I think what we've been doing is trying to use Minnesota Care as the model for how to do this to make it less cumbersome, both on the client and on the state or county. But we haven't got it aligned. But I don't think it's because we don't think it should be. It's a question of, you know, do you not do anything because you don't have the resources in one area, or do you start someplace and start seeing how it works and then move it along in other areas when you get the opportunity? What about this vehicle asset determination? Do you have any comment on that, Assistant Commissioner, in terms of whether that could be done without a fiscal impact and simplify the programs?
We did start to take a look at that, assume we could dig back into it and look at it again. There would probably be some fiscal impact. I'm not sure you can do it neutrally, because you'd have to be evening things out in some way or another. Clearly, food stamps is governed by federal law, but there's actually some flexibility in food stamps,
yes,
as to where you said it, that can,
yes,
be, could be useful.
We could abolish it.
I'm not as familiar with the medical
stamps
programs and how that works, but there could be more alignment and simplification than we have here, particularly around state, where we have state control within those programs. But there may be some cost or savings depending on which direction that went.
Any other comments?
Madam Chair?
Representative Loeffler?
I was looking at this list on page 10, 11 of the manual fiats, manual overrides, and some of them look like, you know, they'd be cases you don't necessarily come across that often, but some of them look like it would be a substantial part of the caseload. Like, for every retro-eligibility request for health care, you know, the MFIT families get it as a package, but I would think of the other people who are really looking for health care, a lot of them are, it's because they're in a crisis and they have bills they can't afford, or their provider is pushing them to apply because they realize they may be left with a lot of uncompensated debt. And so it might be useful, as well as just like you've prioritized these other areas to maybe look at if there's a way to prioritize at least some of these things getting automated based on the frequency of occurrence. Because I think in this day and age, to have to manually change things, I mean, that just slows down everything. And if you forget one thing in that process, then you may be jeopardizing someone's ability to continue care, or they get the wrong notices sent and they get panicked or whatever. Is there a infrastructure sort of, and maybe this is a question you have to take back to your CIO, Vice Commissioner or Assistant Commissioner Johnson, but, you know, of sort of the overall vision so that as we make changes, they all will plug into a superstructure that we understand, even if they're right now legacy, you know, systems that were developed independently of each other. Is there a vision of sort of the overall umbrella that we can keep moving towards? Because I suspect we're not going to have the massive money that it would take to do a total redo, which would make everyone's life easier, including most of the people who work at the state agencies with these programs. But, you know, is that bigger vision evolving so that as we make changes to address these kinds of things, it's moving us towards that?
It absolutely is, Representative Loeffler. That's our intent, is to try to move toward using newer technology when we can and to having full integration across our systems when we can. But these examples that you're looking at on page 10 don't really play directly to that. For example, in the healthcare area, there's quite a few fiats, in part because healthcare eligibility now is on the MAXIS system. And it was basically in 2002 or so, we redid it and moved up to a significant level of automation within healthcare. But that was in anticipation of the bridge time then for a new system to come up, which has, of course, not yet come. In that time period, we didn't invest a lot in MAXIS in healthcare eligibility because it didn't seem like a reasonable investment given that we had a new system coming. In the health match recovery process, that's one of the things that we're considering now is, okay, we are in a bad place right now for healthcare eligibility because it isn't fully automated on MAXIS, and it's going to be some time before whatever the new system is going to come up. How much do we invest in MAXIS in the meantime, and how do we do that? So that's where some of the healthcare in particular questions come, is just around that strategic question and investment question with a new system hopefully coming in the future of what do we do with the old system, how should we invest in the old legacy system. Related to that is the question of modernizing MAXIS and how does that fit with building a new healthcare eligibility system, and do we build one and move everything over there? Do we modernize MAXIS and move healthcare over and put healthcare on there as well? Those are different options that we're looking at, but we aren't at a place yet as to what's the best choice for the state to make on that amongst the various options.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. That's helpful as I'm just trying to learn these systems and how they evolve. You mentioned how our fiscal notes do have the cost of technology associated with them. Is the reverse happening so that as you're evaluating these things and whether or not it's useful to upgrade MAXIS right now, at what investment pays off or not, are the local cost implications part of that analysis so that, you know, if you knew it was going to cost you this much to do this particular improvement, do you know that might make your average financial worker more, you know, 10% more effective or efficient because they'd have less manual work, less wait time, whatever? I mean, is that part of the data that you're using as you're analyzing these system investments?
It certainly comes into our discussions when we're looking at those investments in terms of, you know, in a fiscal note, no. I mean, there isn't, as was suggested in the auditor's report, there isn't a way now for the cost to the county or the added complexity of the county to be represented in those fiscal notes. It may sometimes be mentioned in the text of the fiscal note. This will be done as a workaround, which means the county will have to do more work in order to put it in because we're not going to fully automate it, either because it's small or because it would be complicated to do or because the cost of fully automating might be bigger than anyone wants to tolerate, whatever the circumstances might be. But there's no systematic way of sort of tracking what the impact is on a county worker from a discrete legislative change.
Well, and I think sometimes the counties don't know themselves. I can remember asking counties at various points in time, when we were talking about increasing the frequency with which we have to do verification. It seemed to me like that would have a fiscal impact on the counties because it's going to involve more worker time. It's like, you know, doubling your caseload or something. But nobody could tell me at that time what impact it would have, if any. So we just did whatever we could do about it, but we didn't, you know, we weren't as informed maybe as we should have been.
Madam Chair, I won't ask for a drum roll or anything, but actually on behalf of MAXA, we went forth last year and developed a spreadsheet and have reviewed it with the department and the CFO at that time and also worked with some others, and that we do now actually have a spreadsheet that can put a fiscal note to a task, assuming amount of time that it will take in minutes, and convert it over to cost statewide. Prior to that, we were always burdened with, you know, at 11:30 at night, an email came out, and whatever county could assess and make a determination, and, you know, the counties that had big planning departments could come up with something, and the rest of us were like, sounds good. It was less than sophisticated at best in some areas. Other areas, we were more sure than that. But we feel pretty good about the tool we have in place and have reviewed it. It's better than what we had before, and so I would strongly encourage that there's a way of which we can interface that. We're starting to put that on all of our fiscal notes, or have a fiscal note category in all of our MAXA legislative positions, if and where there is one. And that is on us, and as an association, we needed to step up to that and feel that we've done an okay job, both on the social service, child support, and income maintenance side. So we look forward to doing, you know, providing all of you with higher quality data in the decision-making process. And I'm wondering, Assistant Commissioner Johnson, if there's some way by which we could actually make some appraisals using that instrument for these healthcare workarounds already to some of our supervisors to come up with a consensus of what these processes take in time, convert them over to some costs, and share that just for the sake of adding that dimension to the analysis that you're all undergoing.
Sounds like it would work. Other discussion?
Yeah. Yes. Madam Chair, I have a question, if I may, for Mr. Johnson. It's my understanding in the health match, when that was being studied and looking at to move forward, that there was, now you have to correct me on my numbers, 15,000, I'm not sure if they were called touch points, or 16,000, kind of yes-no questions that Mr. Fleisner was referring to, that our financial workers kind of have to go through in their head. Now, some of those, you can get rid of 1,000 if someone doesn't meet one criteria, so we understand that. In talking, because the department did send up the health match people up to Kitson County to see how things were done up there, in talking with them and other states that they had worked with, there was like 7,000 or 5,000 touch points that had to be in their system. Is those, of those 16,000, is there something that this committee could maybe address? Are those legislative issues, or are those department decisions that are in those 16,000, 17,000?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. How many, you know, sort of the derivation of each of the 16,000. I mean, I know a lot of it is driven by federal and state law, but I couldn't tell you the exact.
I mean, we have a general assistance medical care program. A lot of states don't.
Right.
We have Minnesota Care. It's probably a little bigger or a broader program than some states that just have an SCHIP program. And sometimes I think it's, you know, we've applied for waivers. So then, you know, if we have more waivers than some other state, then we have more variations on our program, and that requires eligibility determinations.
Madam Chair, so is there any study at the department to look at those? Because I think, I'm not sure, but I would imagine that was part of the problem, is how do we manualize or put that on a computer? Is there a to look at that to see what we can change or not?
I can check that. I don't know that you'd be able to get back to all 16,000 rules, because then you're getting back, I mean, the derivation of where any one rule came from would probably be not worth the time it would take to figure that out. But what the question seems to me is, what are the places where, you know, you could make a relatively simple change to the law or to an internal department rule that would save on the number of things that a system and or someone's head has to do in order to determine eligibility.
Right. And that is?
I don't know if that's going on or not, but okay. I can check.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other discussion? Representative Loeffler.
One of the issues that the state auditor staff mentioned as an area for exploring was whether or not the state should look at taking over or somehow otherwise dealing with the complexities of MA eligibility, particularly for people who are looking at long-term care and there's assets. And I think this is an area that we ought to look at because I think there's real inequities across the state. I think our legal profession is incredibly creative, and that's part of the difficulty in terms of trying to look at these complex legal instruments and decide what's a fair way to handle any particular situation. And we haven't really talked about that yet, but did any of the associations talk about that and their reactions?
Madam Chair, thank you for bringing that up, because that's one area that I really, I've been harping on the partnership thing a little bit. So I'm going to also give an example where it has worked very well. And it was the question that originated was when we were looking at Health Connect, at Health Match, okay, and we're looking at MinCare, Minnesota Care Eligibility. You have some counties who do it, and you had the state that did that. The counties predicated our decision on saying that's not in the best interest of our residents, that there's a bifurcated system. Now we're going to automate it, theoretically. We'll automate it. And then what comes out on the other end is you basically compromise what you just gained on technology, because some might go to the counties and some might go to the state. So we asked the department, should we take a look at that, or is that really what we're going to do? And it led forward to the department stepping up and hiring independent consultants to come in and do an evaluation, which led to the Minnesota Health Minnesota Connect. What did we call that?
Health Care Connect.
And there was county, state, equalized partnership from day one, and we were helping each other ask the hard questions. They were bringing in the consultants. They were in the counties, way up in Kitson County. They were over in our counties. They created an as-is model of healthcare, of MinCare, priced, and there was really good findings. One of the recommendations that I believe the state has moved on is this very thing. They've realized how complicated long-term care has become. In our agencies, we have, in ours, we have one expert that the attorneys call in town. Okay, she doesn't have a four-year degree. She's not an attorney, but she knows more than they do about long-term care asset determination, and that's not an isolated reality to Steele County. That's happening around the state. So I believe the department said, one of the things we should do is have, experts or specialists in-house. The counties can hand those cases off to. They will determine the eligibility. Now you've got that consistency, and then they'll hand the case back to the counties for managing. On behalf of the counties, I think that's a wonderful model to look at as we go forward, not just long-term, but in other areas. And so we're hoping that that actually goes to fruition. And I think the challenge is going to be that transfer, the cases going back and forth. In anything we do, it's the transfer where we tend to lose or gain from the benefits had to that initiative. So, but that was an initiative, and it has now four major objectives, I believe, and that committee is still all at the table driving that thing together. So that one worked wonderfully on behalf of the counties as well.
So are you suggesting that this is one we don't need to worry about in this committee? Or the last thing we need is, four committees looking at one
Correct.
Issue, trying to figure it out.
What I would suggest is we can check back with Stephanie Radke, who's the project lead on that, and we will verify that and get a status, and maybe at our next meeting do a status update. But I would hesitate jumping into that one as a committee at this time.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question would be, should we have a brief report on that, since you felt like this was a model that worked well as we're looking at other areas, to see what about it made it bring both people to the table and feel like they could together revise the system and understand each other's goals?
Yes, I would offer it as a proposed for the next agenda if the department's willing as well.
I know on some of these areas, the department themselves has said that if they were going to take over, they would feel like they would need to create a sort of a regional presence. I don't know, Assistant Commissioner, if you know much about that, or I noticed when we were going through the response that the auditors got to some of the suggestions. But, and then I guess the question I have, if that's true, is there then a difference between that and sort of creating regions? Or is there a difference that is worth thinking about?
Madam Chair, I think it's, we've had these conversations just more casually give two examples. One is in adoptions, which was on the list that the auditor had. There has to be a connection back into what's going on locally with adoption in that community, with the kids, with the schools, with everything else that's going on with that kid. So it's not a situation where someone sitting over in an office in St. Paul can just manage this adoption and that'll be okay. So whether that's done sort of through the county but in a different way where the complexity is being managed by the specialist for the department, or whether it's done by someone who is regionally located somewhere, it could be done in different ways probably. Child support, similarly, we've had some of these conversations. There'd have to be some kind of offices or some presence outside of St. Paul, I think, in order to administer the child support system. And again, the connections with the courts, with other human services that are being done presumably through the counties still.
Well, if you were going to do all of it, but if you're just trying to locate an absent parent,
no, and that wouldn't necessarily, that's an example of something where you wouldn't necessarily need to do anything other than move the function to St. Paul and make sure you have the communication channels in place so that the child support workers at a local level could get the questions through to St. Paul. And we do that with some technical aspects of certain pieces. I think there's some parent locate that we do. There's a passport. You can get a passport suspended for not paying child support. That's something that we're in the process of moving to be something that the state would do because it's complicated and they don't come up very often, all the reasons that we've talked about here. So there are pieces of the program that could be done simply from St. Paul. If you move the whole program out, that's something different. And that gets into the question, too, of having some programs being run by the county, some on some regional, some by a state, and how, whether you have the right mix of how that's done in terms of not jerking families all over the place and where they're getting services.
So has anybody actually sort of gone through sort of the main, I don't know, top four or five contenders for this simplification and looked at what needs to be done more at a local level and what could be done at a state level without having to create a regional presence? Has anybody done a list like that?
Well, I think that's what the Healthcare Connect was trying to get at for. I don't think they arrived at conclusions, but that was part of what they're trying to get at with that study. Is that correct? For healthcare eligibility?
You know, it's interesting that I left Stephanie a message today saying we have to talk because I don't know that we ever answered the question. Actually, we went through the whole study, and yet on there I'm waiting to say whether it was recommended that it is best because to be on one platform. Should the state be doing MinCare or should the counties be doing it? And we never did answer that but came up with four real good initiatives to streamline, you know, healthcare. I don't think any formal process has been engaged. I know it hasn't, between the department and the counties to sit down and say, all right, let's take childcare and let's just roll up our sleeves and walk through every, you know, corner and possibility of this with a noncommittal kind of to get it done. That has not happened. I'm intrigued with the concept. I know within the counties, we've done surveys. We get to the point of saying, okay, are we all on board to this? And, of course, with consensus-driven associations, there's always a lot of conversation that goes on, and there isn't any one area that I think every county would stand up, or can I sit here on behalf of Max and say this is the one they're willing to do?
Well, I understand that. We're hoping we can get there by a process of weeding things out and building consensus. In the case of eligibility for Minnesota Care, when I have been out talking to counties, the issue is timeliness. getting the applications done in a timely fashion. They've got some person that has a health care crisis. They're not going to be eligible for general assistance medical care. They're not eligible for MA. They are eligible for Minnesota care, but this crisis isn't going away while we sit around for 4 months trying to get an application processed. And so they're saying we could have done that application like that for them. Why does it take the state so long, and why can't we do it instead? But if you talk to other counties about taking over all of it, you know, maybe when this one person comes along, they wish they were doing it. But if you talk to them about doing it for everybody, they're not so anxious to do that because they say we keep increasing the number of people we have to process for MA, and we aren't getting any administrative dollars for that. So we aren't really anxious to take on a whole bunch of more processing of applications. And, you know, at the state level, we've been a little bit reluctant to put Minnesota Care eligibility determination at the county level because there's some stigma. And it was a program that was designed, you know, primarily for working Minnesotans without access to employer health care coverage whose incomes were moderate or below. And we didn't want them to not go apply because they felt like they were going to the county and asking for welfare. Mm-hmm. And so all of these things are kind of muddled around there. And so I don't know if the best thing is for the counties to do it or not do it, or to have the ability to do it in some cases but not in all cases, or if it's better to get the department to process the applications in a more timely fashion for everybody, so that when you have this healthcare crisis person emerging, that they can get access to healthcare more quickly than they would otherwise. But we have been focusing on trying to get the department to process their applications in a more timely fashion. They claim they are doing that now, but I keep hearing from counties that they have situations where it's not happening. So I don't, and this is even with the technical assistance that the county does give this individual to make a state application. So it's kind of confusing for us to know what is the best thing to do also, because we keep sort of getting mixed signals. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a perfect example of how if we had better outcomes data coming in, you could look at just the dashboard of data and see, because part of it is about equity of opportunity. And, you know, if you're eligible for Minnesota Care and you have a health situation that requires treatment, you should have just as quick a service or relatively as quick a service, no matter where you live in the state of Minnesota, whether the state's processing it or whether it's a county. And it seems to me that that's where, you know, if you had some basic information about average processing times, you could easily compare where there's some problems. If it's a county's doing it, maybe DHS can try and find out what's going on there. Maybe they've got someone on maternity leave, and in a small county, it's hard to fill a position that complicated during that period of time. If it's at the state, then we need to find out what the issue is there. But, I mean, I think that would allow us to have a better sense of what's going on and, you know, make sure that everybody across the state has equal access to the kinds of services that we've developed and invested in for them.
Well, we do have the information about the state. And so, you know, we can look at that. I think at the time, I don't know if it's still an issue, but I think at the time it was a matter of not enough attention being paid to getting vacancies filled within the department among those workers and getting backlogs because vacancies weren't being filled.
I believe the processing is now under, I know it's under 30 days, it might even be under 20. That's an average. Mm-hmm. You may still see something that's longer, obviously, and that may be the case that you hear about when you go to the county.
Right.
And the Brainerd office has helped a lot with that. We now have an office in Brainerd where we have workers who do Minnesota Care eligibility processing, much more stable employment there than you find trying to keep people in the jobs here in the metro area where there's so many other opportunities for people.
Madam Chair, you know, I just, in an effort to clarify, because I actually spoke to most all the counties, in particular even the metros counties, about this. Would you do help if there was adequate funding?
Well, that's a big if.
Well, but let's just, I think it's important to the philosophical premise of counties doing it. They all believe not for the funding, but because it's in the best interest of the folks who walk in the door, because so often they come in and we start on one application, and when they're not eligible for that, we don't have to say, oh, this is where we stop. Now you need to go talk to the state. We just flip over and start and process that next application, and it's done right there and then. And that, when there's adequate funding, maybe not if, when, they're ready and willing and feel it's in the best interest of the resident. And number two, I know and I understand the perception about, well, I got to go into the government office and make the application or the welfare office. But, you know, down in Steele County, for about 18 months, we actually, for the first time, chose to do a MnCare, and I would, had set us up because I was waiting for Health Match to come and thinking, okay, this is the perfect setting it up. But at the end of the day, it wasn't adequate money. The county was subsidizing that added function, and many counties would go tomorrow if they would start processing those claims tomorrow with adequate funding. And we've had to pull it back just because of the tightening of the budget, which was we didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. The financial supervisor didn't want to have to do it because we felt customer service is so much more improved. We never once heard someone say, I wish I didn't have to come here because, you know, that – the concept.
You're talking about people who are already there.
But
how many people from Steele County still came directly to the state?
Sure.
And if they were told, no, we can't take care of you here, you have to go back to your county office, how many of them would have fallen off?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just can tell you the people who came in for MnCare, we hadn't heard, and I'm not trying to suggest that I'm speaking for everyone, but I think that perception about folks, I understand it. I mean, I'd love to have it all web-based, frankly, on my part. Someone can just go apply right there, like health insurance, like Progressive Insurance or whatever. Someday we'll be there, hopefully. But anyway, I think it's important to know counties are willing, and we all know. And then the Minnesota Health Connect only legitimized not only adequate funding, but how understaffed the whole healthcare service delivery system is by 800 staff based upon an as-is model, what it would take to adequately meet the time frames put forth in the current system. The state is 800 staff short. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, we've never turned down the department who requests for more staff to process Minnesota Care applications.
The 800 he's referring to are 800 statewide for all the Minnesota healthcare programs, not just related to the actual state employees who do Minnesota Care.
No. Okay, well, it does make a difference because there is different financing for different programs. Any other comments? Well, I think it might be useful to try to figure out for one or two or three of these, that delineation of what could be done by the state through a central office function as opposed to what would have to be regionalized. Because I think at least as a starting point for, you know, maybe it would be desirable to regionalize some of these services, but I think for starting to figure out what we could do without going that far might be an appropriate step. Representative Loeffler?
Madam Chair, when you say regionalize, I think you need to be clear. Are you talking about those incentives for multi-county consolidation? Are we talking about potentially a regional office, a DHS, that's available to assist on complicated cases? Because I think there's a range of models we could look at, even just in terms of putting more resources into areas.
When
that
I'm
are
talking
seven.
About regionalizing in this instance, it's the DHS response to some of these areas saying, well, we'd have to create a regional office. We'd have to create regional offices. But when you break it down, maybe everything doesn't require a regional presence. And separating those things in the adoption services area or in the child support area or in the contracting for waivered services area, what, you know, sorting it out so that we could at least identify the things that could be taken by the state to do without creating the burden of having to create regional offices for them. Nobody's actually sat down and tried to sort that out, is what I'm gathering, and I'm thinking maybe that would be a good next step for us to do in order to take the discussion to the next level.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just to throw in another option, there might be some functions that don't necessarily have to be either the county or the state. For example, child care licensing, we have a regional child care assistance organization. It's already regional. They do everything else with child care but pay those bills and do that licensing piece. I'm not saying that's the answer, but I think we should think of a variety of models. That'd just be a suggestion. Thank you.
Well, I think that would be an important part of talking about what should be regionalized, if we should bring counties together or whether we should do it through other organizations or what. But if some of this can be done without regionalizing at all to make life easier, maybe right. We should identify that first.
I agree.
That was my only thought. Okay, so we'll put that on our to-do list for the next meeting, and maybe we should see if there are a few people on this group that would like to work on that for the next meeting so that we actually have some folks responsible. Are there any volunteers?
I'm willing.
Some Loeffler?
Sure.
Mr. Harder? Someone from the state agency? Ms. Engelman?
Three.
Okay. All right. We'll try and find either a time to get together or a time to have a conference phone call to talk about it. Okay. All right. We had handed out to you today a copy of the law that created this organization. We all know that we're getting started a little later than the law anticipated, but one of the things that the law anticipated would be that there might be some actual deliverables to the legislature by January 15th of 2009. And it seemed to me that we should think about that. I mean, maybe that's still a possibility, or maybe we should be thinking about creating sort of a different timeline for ourselves that's more realistic.
Well, Madam Chair, I would suggest that if the with paragraph D there, that delivering on that would be a fair chunk of work, and that it's probably not something we'll get done in an adequate way by January of 2009, and another year certainly would be matter a lot in terms of trying to deliver back some more quality thinking on that.
Other ideas on that? Representative Loeffler?
Well, I think it's more important to do it right than to do it fast, because there's always unanticipated consequences. But I think, you know, we might have something of a deliverable if the department and MACSA in that fiscal note analysis that they've worked on, if there's some synergy where we all feel like that is a process by which we can do some testing through the session about whether that's working and helpful as we all evaluate new ideas. That might be something that we could at least tell our peers who had expectations about this, that we are, you know, sort of at least field testing some ideas and exploring them. And it sounds like next meeting when we hear about the Health Connect, that might also be a place where we can report some progress. Because I think that was the setting of the time frame, is to show that there's some movement.
Well, this was actually to report on the transfer of any responsibilities. I think a progress report might be fine, but whether we'll be ready to actually talk about transfer of responsibilities for upcoming, I think it was set that way because this is an upcoming budget session. Whether we would be ready for that, I don't know. But if you want to, we can hold off and do an evaluation of that at the next meeting and then come to a final conclusion about it. Speaking of the next meeting, we were going to have the next meeting scheduled for October 20th at 10 a.m. And we have a couple of legislators who could not make this meeting, and we were thinking about trying to allow them to be take part in the meeting via telephone. And so we're going to work on that and see, just because I think, you know, if we just say, well, we aren't going to do anything between now and the election, and then, you know, maybe we'll have one meeting between then and the session, we're just not going to get there. And so I'm thinking if there's a way to facilitate people's responsibilities at home with this work by allowing them to participate via telephone conference call, I think maybe that might be the way to go. So we'll tentatively keep the October 20th date, and if for any reason we need to change that, we'll let you know. Anything else that anyone wants to bring up today? Yes?
Madam Chair, just for a point of clarification for the next meeting, might we be able to, and I maybe the subgroup we just created could also do an update on the recommendations? We were reporting today that we had brought these forth, and given the time that we had met from the last one, that like number four was done, number three, there's some work, and that, you know, we brought this forth as some recommendations and doing an update on that. And then, Chuck, I thought possibly we could look into that vehicle asset determination. And thus, once again, as a committee, to say we've accomplished something, even though it might be small, a little grape at the bottom of the tree, but I'll take it, and say that it's something to get going. And,
right, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? If not, thank you all for your great ideas and your enthusiasm and your willingness to roll up your sleeves and help us do some work. With that, the meeting is adjourned.
No, he doesn't need some.
Does it need some?